catching up on all the things going on in terms of the offseason for the Southeastern Conference. The center judge.
Right. Come by Reinhardt Prattville today and check the great selection.
We've had the center judge. Has it, in your estimation, done what it was designed to do?
I think it has. It has actually given us another person in the backfield to help the referee watch the offensive line. We actually have somebody who is actively putting the ball down. You're not having the umpire running back and forth all the time. I believe this is the third or fourth year we've had the center judge across college football.
Right.
SEC, we were one of the conferences that actually experimented with the center judge beforehand. I think it has helped out a great deal. I know those guys run a lot. I mean, when we look at sometimes we wear pedometers during the game to see how far we run, and those guys have just about surpassed the deep guys for how far you run during a game.
Question here from our River Region Strong Text hotline from our buddy Jeff, and I'll go ahead and read it out loud. Are we going to see more officials' cameras on TV in the SEC? Officials' point of view is awesome on TV. Yeah, with the little personal GoPro or something like that.
I don't think so.
Do you like it? I mean, is it just personal?
I think whether I wear a camera or not, I have the view. For everybody else, you know, our heads are, especially the deep guys, we are moving around our heads on a swivel looking at different guys and different things. You probably wouldn't like to see what we see. You'd almost be probably drunk by the time you get through. But with an umpire or a center judge, that would probably be a pretty nice view.
Andy, obviously a big rule over the last couple of years is the targeting rule and players being ejected from the games. Any difference there? I mean, is it still going to be?
Not this year. No, what we've done, it has done exactly what we wanted it to do, and that was to change player behavior. You're seeing – the good news is you're seeing fewer and fewer head injuries, neck injuries, concussions, those kind of things. In my opinion, the downside is you're seeing more knee injuries because people now have a much smaller window in which to hit an opposing player. You think about this. If it's a punt or a turnover, you can only hit above the waist and below the shoulder. So on the three of us, it's only about a 2-foot window. That's tough.
And I never thought about that.
And so the other thing is there's also, you're talking about what's maybe coming down the road, there's a thought of taking blocking below the waist out of the game entirely because of knee injuries and safety. And I'll say that if you do that, you might as well hang up football at Georgia Tech and the Naval Academy and Army because you're not going to be able to run the wishbone. So I think as long as those entities could keep running the wishbone, they're going to keep blocking below the waist in the game of football.
In kickoffs and punts, I mean, there's a lot of speed on the field in plays like that.
Right.
I mean, are you – not that you're not looking at every play closely, but if you got to really be looking close on those type plays?
If anything can break loose, it'll be in the kicking game.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Because, you know, there's only 12 rules in college football, but there's 200 pages that fully explain what your exceptions are and what you're looking for, and the majority of that is in the kicking game. If anything can go crazy, it'll be in the kicking game.
Yeah.
Andy – passing along just some observations that we get from fans and listeners, and some of them are legitimate. Some of them strike me as not being legitimate. We make so much money in college football nowadays, we need to have full-time officials. That doesn't sound feasible to me.
I would say this, you know, in college athletics, there are no full-time officials at any level.
Right.
But in professional – football is the only one where we do not have full-time officials. Basketball is full-time, baseball is full-time, hockey is full-time, and I think the reason for that, there are multiple games during the week. With NFL officials, those are not full-time. And I would think that it would depend on what the pay would be. I would think would be a big impact. Because I know with some NFL officials that are attorneys or bankers or stockbrokers, they couldn't quit that job to go and be a full-time NFL official and make what they make.
Yeah.
So you're not going to get rid of it. It's not something you can do and make a living.
But is it an issue to make a living and still to be able to put in the time every week to prepare to be absolutely the best you can possibly be?
You don't have a lot of free time. You know, you get up in the morning, you're probably out running, and then you go home, you get your work done, and you're home at night, and you have a rules quiz, and you're watching video, and you're watching film, and it's a challenge. And I tell you, if it's not for your family that will allow you to do that, it's going to be tough on anyone because you're putting in – you know, 20, 30 hours a week off season, and you're probably putting in another 40 hours a week in football during the season. You're 4 or 5 hours every day, plus the game.
Because, I mean, I've known you for years. We've been friends for a long time, and you know, every once in a while you say, hey, I'm over here this weekend, I'm over there. I mean, you know, I think I'm busy, but I mean, you are out there around all the time as well.
We're on the move. Yeah. We're on the move.
Speaking of being on the move, RPOs. That's a trendy term now. Run pass option, RPOs. What's the deal with linemen being downfield? That goes back to that Nick Martin. Well, I know you can't talk about specific plays, but he goes back to a game years ago.
We will talk about when you leave there, I believe.
Yeah, well, you look at this. You know, we used to have where it was zero tolerance. No one could be downfield before the pass was thrown. Then we went to 1 yard. Now we're at 3 yards. So you got to remember, guys can be as much as 3 yards, but no further when the ball is released. So that's the tough call. Is you're looking at guys that are downfield, and then you're having to look out of the corner of the eye to see when the quarterback throws the ball. Know this year that one of the enhancements we're making with officials is that the guys on the line of scrimmage are going to help out the umpire this year. We've never had that before. It's been the umpire's call the entire way. This year, the head linesman and line judge are going to help out, give us a few more eyes on how many guys are downfield and how far downfield they are and when the pass was thrown.
Was that specific part of football a reason that they added an official?
No, because the center judge is back there in the back. We're just trying to speed up the game and make sure things are handled. You think about this. The NFL moves their umpire to the offensive backfield until they get inside the 20-yard line or there's less than 2 minutes. And that's because you had guys running pick plays off that umpire.
Yeah.
They're considering going to the eighth official as well.
In closing, Andy Britton, is there something about the job of being a collegiate football referee that you can name that you don't think people really fully appreciate? Is there some, or not appreciate, but know about, understand, or anything about that?
You know, we have a, with my job, I work with the Coca-Cola company. At the end of the season, I turn in 8 to 10 names to our company of guys that I'd like to work for our company. We actively recruit college athletes, and you can tell a whole lot about somebody in about 3 hours on a football field.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be the star. It could be a good role player. But, again, there are opportunities for you to meet these guys. You get to talk to them off the field. Like last night, I was asking the guys from Mississippi State, did everybody still have A's after the first 2 days of class? So, I tell you what, you see what's going on in the world, and you think there's some tough times. I'll tell you what, you hang around some of these college athletes, and everybody, we're going to be okay. You got some really good, kids that are out there that are, you know, they're all playing football. They do something they want to love. They're going to school. And you usually hear about the ones that can't behave, but out of the 100 kids on the sideline, there's probably 95 of them that are really good kids that mamas and daddies
And unfortunately, we don't hear enough about that, Andy. We hear about some of the off-the-field issues and this, that, and the other. But you're right. I mean, there are a lot of great kids that come from great backgrounds, even ones that don't come from particularly great backgrounds.
A good example is a young man, we call him Stick. I couldn't tell you his real name to save my life, but he has been at Mississippi State for a number of years as a trainer, and I sort of kept up with him. He went to the NFL, worked with the Colts for a while, then he was with Miami, then for some reason he was at Northern Arizona. Well, last night I got to see Stick again, so he's back at Mississippi State. So we just keep up with guys that you see along the way you may not remember their real name, but you remember their nickname and what they did, and it's just like, you know, you pick right up and you hadn't – it's just really good relationships.
I'm sure you talk to officials in all leagues, NFL, high school, whatever. What do you think the biggest difference as an official between the college game and the NFL game is?
Speed. Every step is speed. When you go from high school to Division II or 1AA, it's a little bit faster. When you go from 1AA or FCS to, you know, whether it's, you know, Power 5 or I don't know what they call it, what's the non-Power 5 school?
The group of five.
Yeah, it is the speed of the game. And you get to the NFL level and the guys are just so big and the game is so fast.
Mm.
Final question, I promise, this time. Your crew, your specific crew, you are a crew of?
A crew of eight.
Have there been any changes?
We have. This year there's been a little shakeup with the crew, so we've got some new guys that are coming in. We got two guys from the Big 12 that are on our crew. One officiated the national championship game several years ago. So we've got guys from all over the country that do all kind of things, everything from a hospital administrator to an FBI agent on our crew this year.
Is it important to build that rapport? Does it matter? Can you just plug guys in and you just function? Do you have to have that?
Well, there's a difference between effectiveness and efficiency. And so what we're trying to do is everybody's trained the same way. Everybody tries to learn their position. So if my crew goes to Alabama or Auburn, I cannot work Alabama and Auburn games because I have a degree from both schools. Mm-hmm. So they send me somewhere else. Well, just pull one guy out of that crew, put him in my position, and I go to Texas A&M or Missouri or somewhere like that. So that part of our training allows us to plug and play, so to speak. But it really helps out when you have eight guys that are going to be around each other, probably more than your family, from the last weekend of August till the first weekend of December. Yeah. And you better be able to get along.
I know we said we were going to – I think we need to try to take a break. I wanted to ask you one other thing when we got back. If you got some time. But yeah. I know we're late for a break. Network control says down the line, Barry, we need to take a break. I think that's the term
we'll use. We'll take a break in just a moment. Though we've waited on them, they can wait on us.
One
more question.
All right. Give us a typical weekend for an SEC official. I know we've talked to NFL officials before. Right. And, being in the NFL, they fly you on Saturday and all this kind of stuff. A little different, I would think, even in a league like the SEC. Right. So talk about how it starts on Friday and by the time you get back on Sunday or whenever it might be.
Well, if you wait till Friday to get going, you're in trouble. I'll tell you that. It really starts on Saturday after the game. We get a thumb drive before we even leave the stadium. We go back. We have a two-hour debriefing meeting. We have paperwork we fill out on our fouls. We have an observer that's there at the game. So we go through all of that. You fly back on Sunday. You actually have a conference call Sunday night. All the officials do to talk about things that went on. Hopefully you don't hear anything on Monday. We usually if you get a call on Monday, things are not good in the conference office. Usually by Tuesday, we get a rules quiz. We're already looking at film from our game previously, looking at film from the teams you're going to be calling on Saturday. On Wednesday, we actually get our grades. That sort of could be a gloom and doom day. It could be a good day. You get your grade for the game from the previous week. On Thursday night, everybody's getting their things together and talking about we've got to watch a training film from the conference office. Has all the highlights and lowlights on it. You're going back one more time looking at your sort of a scouting report on the teams that are coming up. Friday, you either get in a car and drive. For me, I've drive to every school except for Missouri and Texas A&M. And so we drive everywhere else.
Wow. I'm curious, why is it important to get advanced film and advanced scouting reports on the team?
Just like for us, if you're a deep guy, you want to look at what formations are run, what are the tendencies, so you want to be an educated person getting out there on the field. A lot of times we know what play is coming before they even run it because we've studied the both teams' formations and personnel and that kind. So we're just like anybody else, just like a college football coach.
If a team's going to run something different and unique, does the coach tell you, hey, we're going to do this in the game, be looking out for it, or does he tell you a couple of days prior to that?
That usually what happens is the umpire and the referee, they're at once we leave the hotel, we get there on Friday night. We're there for 2 or 3 hours looking at things and going over film and looking at our grades. Saturday, you get up. You have a three-hour meeting at the hotel. We dress at the hotel. We're at the stadium 2 hours beforehand. And usually that meeting is 2 hours before kickoff. The umpire and the referee will meet with the head coach and say, is there anything we need to know about? Mm-hmm. And at that time, they're supposed to share that with us. Some coaches don't, and it can be a real surprise at times.
Wow.
Tackle eligible.
You would think they want to make sure, be looking for it because can we do this?
Right.
I don't want you throwing a flag on us when we run it. We've been practicing all week and whatnot.
Well, the challenge may be you should have probably asked that question before you practiced all week.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering, did they do it the day of the game or prior to that?
But it's interesting. It's a lot of insight and it's a lot of fun.
Well, this whole thing is interesting.
Well, what's the hardest call to make?
Gosh.
It seems as though, the judgment calls out there. You can look and see by, the rule – right. See, but the judgment calls, what is pass interference? Yeah. What is not?
We see it so much it almost jumps out at us. You ask what's the toughest call? The toughest call is trying to make the call you should make when you're not where you're supposed to be and not looking at what you're supposed to be looking at. You really put yourself behind the eight ball, and it's very difficult to make what should be a routine call.
Mm-hmm. And that does not escape the notice of the people who are grading you.
Oh, I'll tell you what, like I say, you watch every play from four different angles, and you can get downgraded on, you're not where you're supposed to be, you weren't looking at what you're supposed to be looking, minus one.
You would think, though, to me, as an observer – a pass interference seems to be the one that gets scrutinized the most. I mean, both guys are running full blast, the ball's in the air, the official's running. I mean, there's a lot going on in a short time period where, you know, some pass interferences are blatant. You can see it. But you always have those guys going, wow, that looked a little close. Or, man, was that really pass interference type stuff?
Well, it's interesting how coaches coach. And what we're seeing are some techniques that are being used that are – they're attempting to impede the receiver without us seeing it. And so we've had to change the way we observe. A lot of times you'll say, well, why did this guy make that call and the guy 20 yards call pass interference? Well, the guy 20 yards probably had a better look at it. And he's looking on one side of the two guys. And the guy that's closest may be in the right position, but his line of sight may be blocked. So there's a lot of things out there that everybody's pushing the envelope.
Are you a flag dropper or a flag thrower? I like these refs that are like way over here, and they get that flag and they zing it.
John's Pascual Perez. I mean, he's firing.
But
that
I don't want to put a guy's eye out like that guy for Cleveland. But man, when those refs zing that flag, that ref really saw something.
It depends on where you are. The deep guys are usually flag throwers because we're usually having to throw to the spot of where the foul occurred.
Yeah,
that's very important because a lot of times that will be a reference point of where you're going to mark the penalty from.
Oh yeah.
Well, that which brings up one final thought. The beanbag.
Right.
What's the beanbag?
Oh, yeah, that's always fun. It, you know, that marks either the end of the kick. It's a reference point. It can, if we see a fumble, put the bag down so you have a reference point of where the fumble took
place. You have to bring it back.
The beanbag is probably the most misunderstood item we use. It's almost like the Batman utility belt. And what's that thing for?
Mm-hmm.
But it's used mainly as a point of reference, whether it's a turnover, whether it's end of a kick, it's where a fumble took place. Yeah, it's a pretty handy
always
item.
To know.
The black band, is that for downs?
It is. I tell you, you get out there with 100,000 people in the heat and things are going crazy, it's a lot of time. If you didn't have that on your hand, so every finger represents a different down,
you'll
it's very easy to forget what down it is.
How about that?
Penalty and things of that nature.
Interesting as always. Yeah, we got to take a break.
Really?
Now we're late for a break. Andy's probably got to go too.
Yeah, I got to go do some work in my day job so I can go do some.
Andy, I got to tell you,
we do appreciate it.
Thank you.
I love the tab that I can get at the Publix on Zelda.